And in this episode of Positively Geared, we will be discussing with Lloyd Edge duplex development. My name is Alex Augustiniak. Lloyd Edge attributes duplex development as a great tool to unlock equity overnight in your investment property and a way to unlock superior yields from your investment property. Welcome, Lloyd.
Hi, Alex. Good to be with you.
Today on this episode, we are discussing duplex development.
Oh, we are indeed. One of my favorite topics.
For a lot of mum and dad investors or people listening to this podcast today who are looking to enter the world of property development, duplex developments are a great foray into that area. Explain to us briefly what a duplex development is.
Okay, essentially a duplex is two properties that sit on one title that can be subdivided, basically. So you've got basically a house. So it looks like a house from the outside and it's two units on the inside. Now, you can actually have two standalone units on the one title that can be a duplex as well. But for this explanation, we'll just have an attached duplex, which is two units on the inside. They've got a party wall down the middle, which is a fire rating wall. And essentially, it can be subdivided so each property can have its own title.
Lloyd, what are the advantages of duplex developments? I know that they've played a pivotal role in you building your wealth.
Absolutely. So the main things about building a duplex for an investment are simply cash flow and equity. So basically means you're going to have dual rent on them. So that's going to be really good cash flow. So instead of just having your 4.5% or 5% rental yield that you might get in your average property, you can have 6.5% to 7% upwards. So that's really good cash flow. And from an equity point of view, if you're building a property for less than what you can sell it for, then you're actually making equity there. And then you can use that equity to go and purchase another property, which allows you to fast forward your portfolio and your financial plans for the future.
In terms of where duplex developments have played a role in your portfolio, you've mentioned that it was possibly one of the defining moments in really helping you continue to build and build, where often, you know, people are faced with a position where they're building portfolios and they hit a glass ceiling and then you've got to reassess to help them continue to grow. With duplex developments, once they're subdivided, does that typically mean that you'd be selling one of them to instantly raise, unlock, I suppose, the wealth tied up in that? Or do you generally recommend that people hold and keep it as part of a portfolio for a longer term?
Well, firstly, what I should say is that you really need to get some advice from your accountant as to whether you're going to sell or hold the property from a tax perspective, because if you're selling, then you're going to have some capital gains tax. Being a new property there, you might have GST and things like that too to consider. The good thing about duplexes is they are very flexible. So you can actually hold one property and sell the other, or you can sell both, or you can keep both. However, it does become expensive selling properties. So there needs to be a strategy behind that. And selling properties should only be done if it's actually going to help you move forward. So where possible, I advise people to actually hold, because what a lot of people don't realize is that you can actually realize your capital gain from the properties without actually selling. And it does come down to your serviceability with the banks, of course, but you can take the equity out of the properties and go and buy another property without having to actually sell the property first. And that's something that a lot of people don't actually understand. So you kind of can keep the properties for cash flow, for growth, and then use that equity to be able to move forward.
With the benefit of your vast experience, Lloyd, now having built this portfolio and managing it for the best part of two decades, what do you look for today when assessing a duplex site for a client of yours or for yourself?
Okay, so the fundamentals of finding a duplex site, like the location, is the same as any other location. So we've covered them off in terms of making sure you're close to amenities, close to all the good infrastructure, has all the fundamentals for growth. The actual terrain of the land is quite important. I do look for corner blocks where possible, because corner blocks are great because you can have the entrances on different streets. That's really good for street appeal, because it basically means that the properties look like houses instead of just duplexes, and it can add to growth and add to cash flow. Getting something that's a fairly flat block is quite important as well, because it can cut down on, you know, your build costs and things as well. But it's not crucial, because what's important is that you actually do your numbers, and you do your numbers and you work out your build pricing. And then if the sales comparables still stack up, then it might still be feasible to build on a sloping block. Where the block actually slopes is important, because you need to, there's a lot of due diligence to be done in terms of where the stormwater is going to run off when you're building. You don't want to have to be creating easements on the neighbor's property or anything like that. So getting some land that, you know, slopes gently towards the road or something is probably going to be more convenient. Checking that the zoning is correct. So looking into the council's development control plan, known as the DCP, and the council's local environmental plan, the LEP, are very important to make sure that the property you're finding meets all the criteria. And then the actual property, whether you're going to buy a property and you're going to knock down the house that's on there, or whether you're getting a vacant block and then you're going to build on there, they're two different strategies too. And that comes down to the demographics of the area and how the numbers stack up for you.
When looking at different areas, obviously, you know, as you've just touched on, we have covered off on all the principles, and you go into a lot more detail in your book, Positively Geared, on what to look for when purchasing in any location, whether it's an established dwelling or with the scope to do a duplex development. Is there any advice you can give listeners today that are undecided as to where they should be looking to do their first duplex development? What I mean by that is, obviously, for example, in Sydney, where we're recording this podcast from, you know, there's quite a high barrier to entry to acquire a site which will allow for that development to occur on. Is it absolutely essential that it's done in a market like Sydney or Melbourne to really reap the benefits?
No, it's not. Certainly, you don't have to do it in a capital city like that. So it comes down to your finances. So obviously checking with the broker, making sure that you understand your financial perimeters, because it's very expensive to acquire a site and do it in Sydney. So you could be looking up to $2 million to do development like that in Sydney. You could look to a strong regional centre and be spending a lot less than that, you know, spending $600,000 for the equivalent project. Strategy is important too, to understand what you're doing. But remember that you're actually adding value to the property here. So you're attaining instant equity. So you can get into a market that's maybe slower growth, but you are getting instant equity with some good cash flow. So there's a good place for that duplex in your portfolio. My first duplex that I did was in a regional center. It was a sub 600,000. So, you know, good purchase point for me. But I ended up getting over 7% rental yield, and I got twice as much equity out of that as what I was earning the whole year as a teacher. I couldn't have done anything like that in Sydney at the time. So that was a very good starting point. And of course, looking outside, you know, your backyard. So obviously you can do stuff in Brisbane, and it's a lot cheaper than doing things in Sydney. So looking at those price points are very important as well.
And in terms of the role that duplex developments have played in your portfolio, is it predominantly on the premise to then unlock equity, which allows you to reinvest into the market? Or is it, have there been instances where, if not yourself, you've worked with clients that the development's been purely to redevelop, then to sell and move on to other opportunities?
Well, a little bit of both, yeah. But like with my own portfolio, I probably owned about 5 properties before I did my first duplex development, and I was probably getting close to being maxed out. And I remember when I got my loan for my first duplex development, I barely got approved for it. I had a couple of negatively geared properties, and I had a positive cash flow property. I knew I had that much, and a couple of other ones in there. But when I did that duplex development and I got positive cash flow out of that and some equity, it actually allowed me to have to move into the next property. But what I personally did is I didn't do another duplex straight away. About 12 months later, I did my next duplex. But before that, with the equity out of my first duplex, I actually invested that into buying a blue chip property in Brisbane, and also buying a property in Newcastle, which is a property that I would buy for the purpose of renovation. So I was investing my equity into other purposes there in order to grow my portfolio.
Would you recommend that people purchase prospective sites with an option, or is that not necessary?
It can be a little bit tricky. Generally, if you're going at it for the first time, then you know, when you're a little bit novice, that might be a little bit tricky purchasing a site with an option when you're doing it for the first time. It's probably a little bit more straightforward to go through the normal purchase process, going through the settlement process, and then getting your DA into council and showing council that the land is settled into your name and everything.
Lloyd, we've touched on what to look for in a site. We've discussed properties or plots of land with dual street frontage. Obviously, have the benefit of separate entrances. They're generally perceived better by purchasers and prospective tenants. In terms of the construction process, what is really important for people listening today that have limited experience working with builders that they need to have an awareness of before they get started?
Yeah, good question, Alex. I think it's really important that people check out their builders properly. Make sure that they're experienced building duplexes, because that's what you want to build. See some of the designs, some of the floor plans that they've done in the past, and maybe have some examples. Maybe they can show you through a showroom if they've actually got one of a duplex there. And check out their reviews, maybe speak to some previous clients to make sure that they've actually finished jobs on time. But what's really important is in the build contract is that you actually mitigate risks as much as possible. So I like to have in my build contracts fixed price. That means you're signing up and you know exactly what you're paying for the contract. A lot of builders in Sydney do cost plus, which means the prices can get blown out a little bit. So if you're doing fixed price, you're kind of signing up for a price with no nasty surprises there. The other thing to consider is to make sure that all the inclusions are in there. You don't want to find out halfway through the contract that the landscaping, the driveways are not included and things like that. Make sure all your inclusions are in the contract, even the subdivision. The other thing also is that when you're building, you want to make sure that you're building to that owner-occupier. So don't try to go for the cheapest investment grade build. You want to build quality. So I try to, for example, the standard ceiling heights in a lot of investment grade properties are 2.4 millimeter ceilings. I go for 2.7. I tend to put in ducted aircon instead of just split systems. I tend to go for the 40 mil stone bench tops instead of just 20 mil. Some upgrades like that. Hopefully you can negotiate with the builders to get good pricing on those. But certainly you don't want to just leave them out just for the sake of getting a really cheap build there. The other thing also is what in the contract what's called late completion damages. When you have a build contract, HIA build contract, you will have a maximum completion time frame, which should be around about 6 months. So let's say 180 days in the contract. The builder needs to finish by that time. If they go overtime, they need to pay you liquidated damages for going overtime. So there's an incentive for them to finish on time. However, builders don't like to put that in the contract. They usually just put nothing there, or maybe put $1 a day there and hope you don't see it. So you want to make sure you go through the contract with a very fine tooth and comb there. And I usually put about $100 a day as liquidated damages. So if they go overtime, then they've got to pay you $500 a week for going overtime. And that mitigates your risk a bit, because it gives them an incentive to finish on time.
So Lloyd, for more seasoned developers who have possibly done one or two duplexes previously, are there any advantages of having a builder construct to lock up and then have your own team of tradies come in and complete the work on the basis of probably being able to minimize your expenses?
Well, I guess the problem with that is then you've got to then take on a real hands-on role in managing all these sort of tradies. When you're hiring a builder who's going to manage that whole process for you, then they've got subbies, they've got their tradespeople there. So they're organizing the concreter and the chippies and the landscaper and everything like that. If it just goes to lockup, then all those last bits, you need to organize yourself. And that potentially can make your costs blown out a bit. Now, when everything's included in the cost in a fixed price contract, yes, the builders do put a bit of a margin on that. However, you do have a time frame when the project's finished. if they just build to lock up and then you are going to start managing things yourself to try to save costs, it may work the other way, because if things take longer to finish, then you're actually going to be out of pocket because the holding costs will be more.
It's a very good point. Lloyd, in terms of from the time that a DA is lodged to construction can generally be approved to commence to a final product, what should people expect is the general timeline in a good case scenario?
Yeah, I like to look at a sort of a 12-month turnaround, 12 to 14-month turnaround. Generally, you know, you can build a duplex in less than 6 months. You need to allow the council time frame. Now, in New South Wales, the council time frames tend to be a little bit longer than, say, in Queensland. So you can get a project built in less time in Queensland. But you also got to allow for subdivision time at the end of the build, once it's completed, to do the subdivision and everything like that. So allowing around 12 months is realistic and probably, you know, a little bit more, but potentially can be done in a little bit less than that. But at the end of the day, you're looking at your feasibility and you're thinking, okay, I'm going to make X amount of money on this. If your goal is to make $100,000 in equity, then you're essentially doing that as a side project while you're doing your job every day and you're making this equity on the side. So, you know, making that sort of equity turnaround in 12 months is actually quite a good outcome.
Absolutely. And Lloyd, in terms of the development process, is there anything that you do to, I suppose, over that period of time, protect or mitigate risk in terms of, you know, external market forces, what they're doing over that period of time? So let's say that you purchase a property and then we see a decline in market conditions, and by the time construction's finished, you know, we've seen a change in the property landscape. Is there a strategy you have in place, or are there parameters that you can use to ensure that people aren't exposed to that risk too much?
So the strategy is the development itself, because you're actually mitigating against a lot of that risk. You just need to make sure your numbers work out. So if you do some numbers and you plan to make X amount of equity, you might get an 80% equity return on your project, which might equal $150,000, for example. If the market was to drop and you only make 10%, then you've still made money on it, as opposed to someone else who's just holding a property. They'll actually go backwards in value. One of the key methods, though, is to still be buying in markets that you're confident, and no one's got a crystal ball, but if you're buying in the right market at the right time, then you should be able to mitigate against that as much as possible. The other thing also is you need to look at what that strategy is. If your strategy is to sell, but then the market does turn around for the worse during the time of construction, then I wouldn't be advising selling straight away. So you might need to change that thought process and realize that you might need to hold for a couple of years and rent it out for cash flow before you sell. So you need to be a little bit flexible there as well.
And in terms of calculating or forecasting a profit, as you mentioned, that's one of the main drivers behind doing these duplex developments, because that's where you're unlocking this new equity in the properties. Is there a general margin that you would want to work on without going below that to make it viable? Is there a point where you say, okay, well, this is now worth our while to pursue?
I like to use margins of between 18 to 25% profit margins. However, there are times where we might look at less than that. And the thing is that when you're doing a duplex, it really depends on what your overall strategy is. Because if you're looking for the trifecta, as I call it, which is instant equity, growth, and cash flow, then you might be in a high growth market that you might be getting a little bit less instant equity, but you got to get that growth over that long term, and you might accept a little bit less equity because of that. If you go to a regional market, you may not be getting much growth, but there might be huge cash flow with a lot of equity there, and you might get a 30% return, but then that might be all you get, and you might be happy with that, but there's not going to be any growth over the long term. So it just depends on what you're actually trying to achieve. So there's no hard and fast rule, but it really depends on what people are looking to achieve. Obviously, if you're going to sell your property and you've got to factor in capital gains tax, GST, agent selling costs, then you need to have a pretty healthy profit margin to make it worthwhile selling, because you're losing so much of your funds in actually selling the property as well.
Absolutely. And in terms of even going to develop to resell, you know, we've discussed over this series capital gains tax and the period of time that, you know, is required to hold a property so that you're not absorbing the majority of that capital gains tax. And part of that tax is very much designed, in my view, to slow people down from doing exactly that, buying, developing, and flipping straight away.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Lloyd, let's talk about your first duplex development. That was for you, as we've mentioned, a big turning point in your, or defining moment in your property portfolio. Take us through the journey of that development.
Well, it was quite amazing, really. The reason it was amazing, because I'd been investing property for quite a while, but I didn't feel I was getting anywhere. So I was doing what everyone was supposed to do, I guess, what we're all told to do, which is invest in property, buying good markets, you create wealth and cash flow and everything like that. But I wasn't getting a lot of growth, and I was having negative cash flow and a bit of debt and all that kind of stuff. But really, when I did my first duplex development, and I was earning about $70,000 a year as a teacher, but I made $141,000 in equity. That's twice as much as I was earning as a teacher. The light bulb really went off in my head, and that was my aha moment that really changed things and really got me moving. So this property was in, I actually did it on a corner block. It was in Armidale in northern New South Wales. Beautiful area of Armidale there. Quite a new experience for me there, and seeking out, I guess, advice from various people I'd known who'd sort of done that kind of stuff in the past, and also from local real estate agents and everything, and then having to sort of deal with council, having never dealt with them before. It was a very interesting process dealing with council, because we'd submit the plans and everything like that, and then council would come back and request a change, and then you'd get the builder to do that change, and then you'd submit that back into council, and then the council would come back and request another change. So one, they might be requesting the floor plan to change a bit to let the light in a different way. Then they come back again and request different types of landscaping. Then they'd come back in and say something else about the driveway and so on. What I learned from that was that, subsequently in future developments I've done, when council would come back and ask for something, I've said, is this it? Is this all the changes? Because I didn't, they kept coming back to me asking individually, and that really drew out the process. A council can really drag things out like that. So, when they come back and ask you for any amendments, you really need to get that, done straight away from that perspective, because that made the process for the DA on that one, which should have only taken 2 or 3 months, took about 5 months. So that was a good learning for me, so that I could sort of learn from that and for future developments and for when I was assisting my clients and things.
And in terms of that overall process, we've just covered off on what you ideally look for in a site. Given that did take a bit longer than you anticipated to construct, what did the market in Armidale do in that time? Did it sort of just plod along pretty steadily? I know you mentioned that your return on that development exceeded your initial expectations.
Yeah, it did actually. But I also, because I was new to it, I didn't have great expectations. I wasn't sure how it was going to work and everything like that. So I can certainly understand these days how people are still a little bit worried about how something like that's going to work and everything. But the market in Armidale has always been quite steady. It's it's a steady regional market. There's plenty of growth drivers. There's the university there. The hospital was upgraded. About $81 million was spent on the hospital back in about 2015. It's been quite a steady market with slow growth. And there's been even some years such as 2005, when Sydney was in decline, Armidale was actually getting some growth. So it's a good market, albeit not huge amounts of growth, but certainly during that time frame it was getting slow amounts of growth. So the longer time frame in council didn't affect me at all. And once we finally did start building, things went up quite well, and it was quite exciting.
And was there anything that particularly attracted you to Armidale at that time beyond what you've just mentioned?
So I never get attracted to a location because I like a location. It was really about the numbers. A lot of people around that time were spruiking other areas. People were spruiking about Gladstone and Toowoomba in Queensland, saying that they're the best areas in Australia to invest in property and everything like that. I felt that I've always felt that if you do the same thing that everyone else does, you're going to get the same results as everyone else. And of course, everyone kind of follows. Yeah, everyone's a bit like, everyone's like sheep. They sort of follow everyone else. So Gladstone was becoming oversupplied by people investing, and so was Toowoomba, and developers were going in there, and builders were building and everything like that. And of course, what happened was the coal seam gas in Gladstone collapsed, and then the market went backwards. And then in Toowoomba, the market became saturated, so there was not much growth there. But prior to that happening, I predicted that that was going to happen. So I thought, I'm not going to be involved in those markets that everyone else is talking about. No one was talking about Armidale. So I thought, yeah, that looks quite good there, because I was just looking at the sales prices of what you can actually sell units and townhouses for and the rental yields. And that's what attracted me to the market. And I thought, this has got quite good yields here. I could hang on to this property. And, you know, all these years later, I've still got that property in my portfolio and it's still renting, you know, very well. And the instant equity was great at the start, and it's continued to build equity. And that's what really attracted me to that location, as no one else was talking about the area.
So in terms of, with the knowledge that that was, a defining moment for you, Lloyd, in being able to continue to grow your portfolio, for people that are sort of warming to the idea of doing a duplex development, you know, we talk about strategy being, you know, at the forefront of everything we do in property investment, and in terms of the advice you give any of your clients, what did this allow you to do moving forward? Did it allow you to purchase another property in a location which was initially sort of out of your budget? Obviously, it's unlocked a lot of equity for you overnight. What did that then lead you on to do?
Yeah, that's exactly what it did. So without doing that, I would have really struggled to buy maybe one more property, which might have been an apartment somewhere, and then I would have been stuck. What this allowed me to do was grow a larger deposit very quickly, which allowed me to go, I went and bought a blue chip property in Brisbane. I went and bought another property in Newcastle. And then I also still had some money left over from that equity, which allowed me then to put that towards my next duplex development as well. So it allowed me to expand my portfolio quicker, but it also, because of the good cash flow on it, it allowed my borrowing power to keep moving forward, because I had previously been almost maxed out, but because of the good rental yields on it, the bank saw that as better, in a better situation than what I had been. So in a number of ways, it really helped me to be able to move forward.
What learnings did you apply to your next duplex development?
Certainly being more on top of things with council, and probably being more on top of things with negotiating with the builder, and also the inclusions. So, and these days, you know, my clients benefit a lot from my contacts and relationships with builders, so that we get a high level of inclusions. So my first duplex didn't have the high level of inclusions that I have in properties these days, either for myself or for my clients.
In terms of working with builders in more regional areas of the country versus in major cities, I know we've touched on fixed price contracts versus cost plus, which you've mentioned is very common in markets like Sydney. Is there any other differentiators you've found between the different areas in terms of the experience that you went through dealing with various builders?
One of the things I would recommend, though, is if you're in a regional area, try to go with a builder that is actually a franchisee or part of a larger company. You want to be careful not to go with the little guy who's maybe just building a couple of houses a year and they're like their own sort of owner builder or a very small sort of guy, because they're the people that tend to try to undercut people for work. But they're also the same people that can't pay their tradespeople on time, and then they can potentially go under. So you want to be careful of that. So go with someone who might be a builder in Queensland, but they also build in northern New South Wales. So they'll come down and build in regional locations as well as building in capital cities. So it's the same builder, and they just access various tradies and send them there. And for example, I mean, I'm building in areas where I've got big builders who are actually sending their tradies interstate to various areas, just north. So if I've got a builder in Brisbane, they'll send their tradies to northern New South Wales to do jobs because it's more cost effective and it's really good for our clients that way.
So Lloyd, for somebody that's embarked on the journey of completing a duplex development, they've completed construction and they're sort of now going, okay, well, what are the next steps? How does one actually unlock that equity in the development?
Okay, good question, Alex. I'd probably like to take it a step back though and probably look at the beginning of the project before you even enter the project, because you want to see that it's feasible. So you really need to work out what you're paying for the land, what you're paying for the builder, and then other costs such as legals and stamp duty, holding costs and finance costs, which includes interest payments and things during the length of the build. You really need to work out and find out if you're going to make money. So, for example, if the total project is going to cost you $800,000, you need to work out how much individual units are selling for in that area. Now, if you can see that each, individual units are selling for, say, $500,000 each, then that means that on completion, you got two units that'll be $1 million and you're built for $800,000. So just using round numbers as an example, that's $200,000 in equity. So that's the first thing. That's the first principle to keep in mind, is that's how you're, the key there is build for less than what you can sell them for. When it comes to accessing that equity, what you need to do is get what's called a valuation, and you need to get that valuation on completion after you've done the subdivision. So there's no point just getting the property valued again when it's just been built on one title, because you're probably not going to get a lot of equity there, because the equity really comes when the property becomes individually titled. Then you'll have a valuer come out and they'll actually value the two properties individually, because what you've done is you created two properties. So you built one property, but you've turned it into two. And the valuer will come out and they'll say, okay, unit one in Equity Street is $500,000 and unit two in Equity Street is $500,000. So total $1 million, you only paid $800,000. So there's your equity. Now banks will lend you generally up to 90%. A lot of the time, maybe only 80%, depending on your circumstances and the lender you're using. But your usable equity is 80% of that. So you might be borrowing perhaps $160,000 from that $200,000. Now, the other thing I also recommend you doing is refinancing with a different bank to who you've built the duplex with. So you're actually not just refinancing with the same bank, but you're actually taking your loan to a different bank, because they often, because they don't already have the security, might be a little bit more generous with giving you the equity loan for that property.
That's great advice, Lloyd. And in terms of what are the risk factors of drawing all the equity down in that property in a broader sense?
When you're taking all the equity out, it obviously increases your loan on the property, and it diminishes your rental yield, because you've got more loan on the property, less rental yield. Although the rent will be the same, the actual yield goes down. So in terms of risks, you sort of got to mitigate that. What I tend to do is not necessarily take all my equity out. So if you've got $150,000 equity in a property, you may not necessarily do what I did back in 2013, which was decide to buy another five properties in 1 year. Maybe one property is enough. So just take out what you need for one property, which might be a 10% deposit. So maybe you just need to take out 60 grand. That'll be more feasible. So you still got equity in the property. You don't want to take out more than you need to, because you need to make sure there's equity in the property, and also mitigate against the fact that the market could perhaps fall at some stage.
That's great advice, Lloyd. Lloyd, we've discussed the importance of feasibility. So ascertaining what the cost is to acquire the site, plus your cost to construct, any sundry on top of that. Before you can acquire a site, what's very important is to complete your due diligence. How important is due diligence, and what does that typically constitute?
Yes, well, Alex, with due diligence, when you're finding a site to build on, there's a lot more to it than just, is it a good investment location? Because there's a few things you need to really check out, because you need to make sure that you can actually build what you're going to build on this particular block. I'll just give you an example. My wife and I used to live in the inner west, and there's a block, vacant block next to us, which we used to all love, because we used to just use it as a car park. And then council sold it off at an auction to someone. However, they spent the next 5 years trying to get a DA through. Firstly, they wanted to build a duplex, got declined. Then they wanted to build a house, got declined. Then they wanted to build a childcare, it got declined as well. The moral to this story is they didn't do any due diligence beforehand. If they had actually found out beforehand what they can and cannot build on this block, they probably wouldn't have bought the block in the first place, or they certainly would have been submitting different types of applications to council. So when you're looking to buy a block to build a duplex on, as I mentioned previously, you need to check out the DCP and the LEP, but a conversation with council's town planning authority, a conversation with a builder and an architect or the builder's draftsperson, and even the council lodgement officer at the builder, and cross-checking everything. You need to make sure that the setbacks are right, that the design can be approved on the block, that there's no easements or sewers or any restrictions to building on the property. You need to get your solicitor to check out the contract properly because there may be some items on the contract that might be an issue because there are certain restrictions to building, and you need to make sure that's all checked out. Check that out before you even consider buying the property, because it's too late after you bought the property to find out that something's wrong there. So that's a very important bit of advice. And that's why I also recommend for something like a development is that you actually seek some assistance with that rather than just go it alone.
I think that's all very true, Lloyd. And if we can just tie that back into the conversation we were having a bit earlier in the podcast around what to look for in a builder, I think having a builder that has experience building under a certain council is definitely going to assist with that due diligence, that having that knowledge of what can and can't be done.
Absolutely, that's very true, yes. A builder who does know the council area very well and that they've built a number of times previously under that council, yes.
For a development which effectively the target or the goal of that development is to obtain as much profit or equity as possible, do you generally recommend ever working with an architect or a draftsman in terms of going beyond just a builder?
So if you work with an architect, that's always good, but often if you're trying to design something, maybe your own home, builders have their own draftspeople, and I often recommend doing that and including that as part of your fixed price contract, because you're trying to get the build done in a certain amount of time. If you go to an architect instead, that can actually draw out the time frame a little bit more and also draw out the costs. So I recommend dealing with the builder's draftsperson and getting them to design the plans. But of course, you need to work with someone that you're comfortable with, that you can give feedback to and say, no, I don't like this, I don't like that, that needs to be changed. Don't work with builders who won't make any changes for you. You don't want to build with a builder who just wants to build dodgy investment properties and not do anything that satisfies your needs. Because remember, your goal is to build a quality property in an owner-occupied area. So even though you're building an investment property, it's got to suit that owner-occupied demographic. So you need something quality there.
What's your opinion on project builds versus a master build?
Look, I think both have their place. At the end of the day, it comes down to the demographics of what you're trying to do. And cost does become an issue in there as well, because although we're never wanting to build too cheaply or anything like that, sometimes people are on a bit of a budget and they may need to sort of build a cheaper type of project home. However, just always looking at that strategy and where you wanted to build, and some states are cheaper to build in than others as well. So there's a lot of different things to consider.
There's some really valuable advice, Lloyd, and information which you have covered off on in today's episode. Inside your book, Positively Geared, you go into a lot greater detail on this very topic. Highly recommended that our listeners grab a copy of the book.
I do, Alex. And in the book, I actually talk a lot more about the council requirements and the different stages that the DA process goes through council. So that's quite in depth, but I won't go into that right now. But I do go into that with a lot of detail as well.
Thanks so much for your time.
Cheers.
Well, there we have it. That concludes our first series of Positively Geared. Over the last 10 episodes, we've drawn on a lot of content from Lloyd Edge's new book, Positively Geared. I strongly recommend you purchase a copy of Lloyd's new book from any good bookseller. What I love about the book is that it caters to investors of all experiences, from novice to the seasoned investor, and there's certainly something for everybody to take away from it.